and welcome in to a Tuesday edition of the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Good Tuesday morning to you, and welcome back. I think it is safe to say this morning the theme of yesterday, the golden age of America, is back. Thank you so much for joining me this morning. Don't forget to follow me over on my X account at Nicholas M. Craig, where you can keep up to date with all of the ongoings throughout the day as we trek through what was an incredibly busy day in Washington, D.C. yesterday, inauguration day for what was president-elect, now solely President Donald Trump. He was 45. He is now 47, and we have got a lot to get into this morning, including over 33 executive orders signed by the Trump administration, the brand new Trump administration, yesterday morning. We'll start off before we get to any of the actual executive orders, of which there are plenty, talking about, or actually showing you, the moment in which Trump took his oath of office.
Please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear.
I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully execute.
That I will faithfully execute.
The office of President of the United States.
The office of President of the United States.
And will, to the best of my ability.
And will, to the best of my ability.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
So help me God. That was the moment inside the Capitol Rotunda yesterday as Trump did take that oath of office at a much pared down event due to some of those chilly, chilly conditions in Washington, D.C. that caused what was expected to be a very large outdoor inauguration, moving those events indoors due to that frigid cold temperatures and weather, which, of course, if you have stepped outside this morning in southeastern North Carolina, you're experiencing those same kind of temperatures as well. It is bitterly cold outside. We'll talk about the forecast coming up here in just a couple of minutes, as we've got some potential snow and wintry conditions set to move into the Wilmington area a little bit later on today. We'll have that coming up for you here in just a little bit. So that was the swearing in. Of course, before that, it was J.D. Vance, his vice presidential pick, taking his official oath of office as well. And from there, we then headed into the inaugural address, which took place in front of about, I think the number was about 600 or so people that were actually inside the Capitol Rotunda yesterday. And it wasn't long into his comments that President Trump mentioned the state of North Carolina and some issues that are being dealt with here. And a lot of that, well, hopefully set to change. Here's Trump yesterday.
Our country can no longer deliver basic services in times of emergency, as recently shown by the wonderful people of North Carolina, been treated so badly. And other states who are still suffering from a hurricane that took place many months ago.
Many months ago, and yes, it was in fact many months ago that the western half of our state was dealing with some of those major issues in regards to hurricane relief and recovery. This is unfortunately still an ongoing saga as the state continues to grip with these major issues. Obviously, the biggest, of course, being the lack of federal response. We've seen this back and forth with FEMA over the last little bit. We've seen this constant moving of the goalpost in regards to when people can or can't stay in various hotels. And it's a mess. It's an absolute mess. And, you know, what Trump says, you know, we're looking forward to bringing back this golden age of America. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that shouldn't be happening in our country. I mean, if we look at what, you know, happens in the world, all of the issues that happen across the world, we should not be dealing with in this case, minuscule, poor government response here in North Carolina. Yet we are. And we've been dealing with that since September. Why is that the case? Because the federal government is broken. The federal government is incapable of dealing with, while yes, a complicated task, the thing that they have been nailed over the last couple of months, really, it's really popped up in the last couple of weeks, is their inability to communicate with people that are receiving assistance from Hurricane Helene. Huge amounts of uncertainty in regards to whether or not people will have a place to stay in a hotel room. That is exactly what has been going on. And it's even gotten so bad that it has prompted Governor Josh Stein, a Democrat, to send a letter to FEMA to try and deal with some of these issues. That's the level of incompetence that we're dealing with at the federal level. And unfortunately, I can't sit here with a straight face this morning and tell you that that is a surprise or that is a shock. Because that is what, unfortunately, we have come to expect from the federal government. And it's a real shame. But it's not a surprise, ladies and gentlemen. It's not a shock that that's what we're talking about. And these are some of the more, I guess I'll say, minute issues. Obviously, I'm not minimizing the impacts of Hurricane Helene out in western North Carolina. But in the grand scheme of everything that's going on, FEMA relief is not a huge issue that affects the vast majority of the country. Now, for the individuals it affects, it is a massive and huge deal, not taking anything away from that. But in the grand scheme of things, it's a relatively minute issue. It is a bureaucracy issue. It is government at its absolute worst, failing the American people on the task of hurricane relief. And these are some of the things that we are hoping the Trump administration ushers in. Because nobody should be sitting in a hotel room from Western North Carolina and truly not knowing whether or whether not they are going to have a place to stay the next morning. But unfortunately, that is exactly what is going on. Unfortunately, that is exactly the issue that they are facing. And so Trump talks about ushering in this golden era of America. And of course, we will have at this point years to talk about what that looks like. But these are some of the immediate actions that are needed. And this is not in no way criticism of Trump or the administration. They've literally been in the office now for what, like 19 hours or something? I mean, he took the oath of office at 12:01 yesterday afternoon. I understand things don't happen with the snap of a finger. But Trump's got to get these people out. Diane Criswell, who is currently the head of FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, needs to no longer be in that post. Now, does she have room in FEMA? Possibly. I'm not sure. But there is no way that she should continue as the director of that agency. Because I think it's pretty evident and pretty accurate to say that she's done a pretty abysmal job in her task of helping individuals deal with this issue. I feel like that is an accurate thing to say. And so in the coming days, in the coming weeks, those are the kinds of things that I'm going to have a very close eye on as we look at what this incoming administration does. We know that there's a lot of incompetence in government. We know that, unfortunately, government falls short time and time again. And the result of that is people get hurt. Not only in some cases physically hurt, but you're talking about the emotional stress and strain that these people are already under. They have already lost their homes. They've already had their businesses, their schools wiped away. and they can't get a clear answer out of FEMA whether or not they can stay in a hotel? How is that possible? And to only compound the issue and make it even worse, you've got tens of thousands of more people out in portions of Southern California that are going to be dealing with the same issue. And so if they couldn't get Western North Carolina right, and again, we're not even talking about rebuilding. We're simply talking about giving people hotel vouchers and telling them how long they can stay. That is not a complicated task. The federal government and FEMA have blank checks to do whatever they want with, to fly immigrants around the country and house them. That's what FEMA spent some of their money on. So it's not a monetary issue. It's a bureaucracy and a procedural issue. And that's the kind of changes that I'm hoping we see within the government. And I understand my expectations are set. This stuff doesn't happen immediately. This stuff doesn't happen overnight. It's going to take some period of time to get everybody caught up to speed, to get individuals in these new posts. I don't think the solution is going in and just, you know, firing FEMA or dismantling FEMA, because in the meantime, you've got people that really, really need help. So that is not the solution, at least right now in the short term. Long term, that might be the goal and the solution, and I would welcome that. But in the short term, these people still need help. And if Diane Criswell can do it, great, but it doesn't seem like she can. So it's going to be incumbent on this administration to get somebody in there at FEMA, because it's a mess. And it's very complicated, and now you've got tens of thousands of more people affected in Southern California. By the way, new wildfires literally still burning as we speak this morning. So it's a tricky, it's a messy situation, no question about it. We'll talk about Trump's executive orders coming up here in just a minute. But before we get to those, speaking of getting some of those new individuals in there, Marco Rubio has now been confirmed as President Donald Trump's Secretary of State. As you probably saw some coverage last week, he was grilled by his Senate colleagues on the Hill, and he will now serve as the 72nd, spit that out, Secretary of State. There was a 99-0 unanimous vote, including Rubio casting a vote for himself. He will now vacate his Senate seat serving the people of Florida and take his place as the head of the State Department. That's according to The Hill. Chuck Grassley of Iowa said on the floor of the Senate yesterday, quote, "No one on this body can doubt that Marco Rubio is an intelligent man with remarkable understanding of American foreign policy and a very deep commitment to the American dream. Rubio is the first of Trump's cabinet picks to be confirmed, and it happened on Trump's first day in office. Many other nominees were questioned during confirmation hearings that took place in the Senate last week. However, at this point, none of those individuals have come up for a vote yet. First, it was Rubio." Now, it is expected, and a lot of this, of course, is still up in the air. It was expected that some of these easier individuals to go through, like Marco Rubio, like Pam Bondi, individuals like that would kind of go through the Senate first as they gear up for the major battles of with individuals like RFK Jr., like Pete Hegseth, who are not going to get this unanimous 99-0 vote. The Democrats, probably all of them, will not vote in favor of confirming people like Hegseth and somebody like RFK Jr. So it's good that at least right off the bat, Trump's got his Secretary of State, Marco Rubio. RFK hasn't even had his hearing yet. That's going to be interesting. We'll await the schedule on that. And I can promise you when that happens, it is going to be a very interesting affair to watch as the senators that will be grilling and asking questions of RFK. That will be maybe even more interesting and exciting to watch than the Hegseth one, in which I think he did an absolutely phenomenal job in pushing back on the Democrats, pushing back on their nonsense, bringing up just ridiculous things about, we heard from somebody that you drank too much one time and had to be brought back to your hotel room. Okay. Yeah, that sounds like somebody that we can't have in any form of government, right? Somebody that at an event drank too much. Oh, yeah, no, they can't be involved in government. Of course, for then the senators to be called out on their own inability to do their job without drinking, many late night votes in the Senate taking place after senators go out for dinner, drink, come back, vote. But no. Good for the goose, not good for the gander. Typical Democrat hypocrisy and typical Democrat double standards in Washington, D.C. So Rubio is in. Great news there. We'll see when the rest of these individuals are set to get their confirmation votes as Trump begins the process of actually filling up his cabinet so that the work of bringing America back into this golden age that he talked about yesterday can actually begin. I want to tell you about a way that you can support the show and get access to bonus content, including our daily show notes. It's patreon.com/Nick Craig. There you can head on over and subscribe to the show. We've got two different levels, and I learned yesterday you can actually set a custom amount thanks to one of our audience members with a very generous contribution over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. You can head over there, get access to that bonus content, exclusive content there, and support the program. It's patreon.com/Nick Craig. So with yesterday, all of the events and festivities in Washington, D.C., as we reported yesterday morning, the Trump administration, it was expected to immediately head and make some drastic changes, doing that via executive order. That's, of course, something that, well, is not the end-all be-all. There are executive actions, which means as quickly as Trump can put them into effect with the stroke of a pen, they can be removed by somebody else. As we go through the executive orders, I think I've got 13 different slides going through the executive orders. It can be easily removed. This is a good first step, but some of these things will need to be codified by Congress over the next 2 years while Republicans at least guarantee their majority. Obviously, midterms we'll get into months down the road, but as of right now, Republicans have that majority. They need to take advantage of it, and in the future, codify any of these EOs that need to be codified into law. So let's take a look at some of these executive orders. They're broken up into a plethora of different categories. We'll start off with immigration and the border. The first was a proclamation declaring that, quote, an invasion is ongoing at the southern border, guaranteeing states protection against such invasion and invoking executive powers related to the surge of illegal immigration. Another immigration and border EO was entitled Protecting the American People Against Invasion. That was also in response to the unprecedented admission of illegal aliens at the southern border. And one of the others was ordering the securing of the southern border by various methods, including building a border wall and ending the CBP One app. Now, if you spent any time on social media yesterday, you may have seen this video that was circulating around social media. It was a woman I don't know exactly what port of entry she was at. This was tweeted out by a Washington Post journalist, and it was tweeted out a little after 12:30 yesterday, and it claims that an individual, one specific woman, was waiting for their 1 p.m. CBP-1 parole appointment. And with this executive order that Trump signed right off the gate, that CBP-1 app is shut down. And in this video, which I don't know if the media has fully gotten a hold of yet, she's wailing and crying uncontrollably at the border because her appointment was canceled. This CBP-1 app has been a freaking disaster. It allows individuals outside of the U.S. border to essentially request asylum. I mean, the idea that is what we are encouraging. Again, when you look at the issue of illegal immigration, something that the Biden administration oversaw, something that the Biden administration allowed, part of it, yes, is the fact that border rules and laws and immigration rules and laws weren't followed. But the other part of it is the fact that kind of in a wink, wink, nod, nod style fashion, this, the previous now, thank God, the previous administration, essentially were waving these individuals into the country by introducing things like the CBP One app. So all this, the app is gone. No, anybody that had an appointment, which I don't know why, if you were truly trying to get in America, why the hell you would have waited until Inauguration Day to do it, but that's not here nor there. The app is gone. And it should be. It's absurd that you could literally download an app on your phone somewhere in South America and essentially request asylum into the United States. That's why we had an immigration problem, or one of the many reasons why we had such an immigration problem. So the CBP One app is gone. And I'm sure in the coming days, if it hasn't already begun, the media will start finding these stories of individuals that tear at your heartstrings so they can once again demonize Trump, demonize the Republicans, claim that they hate immigrants, they hate migration, they hate individuals that are coming from anywhere outside the United States, the typical media playbook on this issue. We have a sovereign nation. A sovereign nation requires having borders. I mean, you can't define a nation without defining its borders. Without that, it doesn't exist. Yet, for whatever reason, this previous administration thought it was a good idea to just kind of squint and blur the lines in regards to our border. That's coming to an end. And whether the mainstream media likes it or not, whether Democrats that will, of course, promote individuals that are now dealing with the ravage of Donald Trump, the American people were dismayed and dumbfounded by what they experienced in regards to immigration. They were not happy with the wide-open U.S.-Mexico border that was for many years. That was evident in polling, and it was evident in November when the American people sent Joe and Kamala packing. And we got to wave Joe goodbye in his helicopter yesterday. Same thing with Harris. The American people do not and did not support that. Meanwhile, Democrats, of course, will take videos like this and blow them out of proportion and into the biggest travesty that has ever taken place. So let's get back to Trump's executive orders in regards to immigration and the border. We talked about the CBP One app. He declared a declaration of national emergency at the U.S.-Mexico border as well. He also signed an EO, a realignment of the U.S. refugee admission program. He claims, quote, to better align with American principles and American interests. He also issued an executive order ending a birthright citizenship, a restoration of the death penalty for killing of federal agents or law enforcement. He declared cartels, this of course would be individual groups like the Sinaloa drug cartel in portions of northern Mexico that are using mules and individuals to smuggle drugs and humans across the border. He declared those cartels terrorist organizations, as well as an EO which gives protections from foreign terrorists and other national security and public safety threats related to the southern border. So right off the bat, taking charge on the border, which I think the American people are very much in favor of. So moving on from there, we'll talk about some of his executive orders in regards to federal workers. An order to reform hiring in the federal government based on merit. A change in policy to make it easier to fire poor performers amongst the federal workforce, which is a huge issue. And it's not just a federal government issue. This is relevant in states all across the country. It is so complicated, and in many cases, damn near impossible to fire state and federal workers who aren't doing their job because of the bureaucracy, the red tape, and all of the other nonsense that is put in place. And I can't believe that we even have to sign an executive order for this. You have to sign an executive order to have individuals that are poorly performing at their job removed from their post? Man, that's absurd. Yet, that's exactly what's going on because the bureaucracy makes this stuff so hard to deal with. One of his other executive orders was an order to hold former government officials accountable for election interference and unlawful disclosure of sensitive information, referring to the national security officials who co-signed a letter suggesting Hunter Biden's laptop was Russian disinformation, as well as a memorandum to ensure career senior executive officials in the federal government implement the president's agenda or they are removed. And that's a big one right there. That's a big piece of all of this because Trump can, he kind of talked about this last night. This was around 9 o'clock or so when he was back at the Oval Office, back at the White House, signing the rest of these executive orders. You know, Trump can sign all of these things all day. And in the case of yesterday, he did spent literally 8 hours signing executive orders from start to finish. But if they're not going to be implemented, if they're not going to be enforced, well, that, of course, is a huge issue. So making sure that these executive orders are actually enforced is important. And in a back and forth exchange with reporters in the Oval Office last night, it was Peter Doocy asked the question, is Elon Musk going to have an office here in the West Wing? Trump said no, he's going to have an office with about 20 people, and their first task is going to make sure that these executive orders that I'm signing today, that they get implemented. As he noted, that it can sometimes take 6 months for some of these things to take effect. Their executive order, their executive action, they need to take place immediately. So those were a couple of things on federal workers. Back to that, a regulatory freeze to prevent bureaucrats from issuing any more regulations until the administration has full control of the government. A federal hiring freeze except for the military and other exempt categories until the new administration takes control and the government's objectives are understood. And a requirement for all federal employees to return to full-time in-person work immediately. There's some good stuff in here. And if you'll note in those first two bullet points, most of this is until we get control of the government, until the Trump team is fully in, until they have had a chance to sit down and breathe for a second. We're not creating any more restrictions, rules, or bureaucracy with red tape. And we're not hiring anybody new. Unless you're in exempt positions and for the military. Everybody else is just going to have to wait until we get control. And then, of course, returning to full-time in-person work. I'm fortunate enough to work remote. It's lucrative. It's something that I enjoy. But in the case of the federal government, I would not be surprised to hear, and I think some of the data would back it up, that remote working is not necessarily the best course of action. I think that's a pretty safe assessment. So that's on federal workers. Turning our attention to gender and DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. A federal policy that defines male and females as only two genders, as well as an executive order ending diversity, equity, and inclusion programs and policies within the federal government. And it took just minutes for some of these things to take place. That's what's so crazy about what goes on here when you look at the changes within the federal government. Some things happen immediately in regards to these executive orders. Others take forever. This is a screenshot from the U.S. Office of Personnel Management. This is before January the 19th. You can see they have their Chief Diversity Office, Executive Council, whole page on DEI and a bunch of gender garbage. Yesterday, page 404, not found. We're sorry, we cannot find the page you're looking for. It might have been removed or changed its name or otherwise is unavailable. That stuff seems to be taking place almost immediately, which is great because that's exactly what needs to happen. No reason that the federal government should be playing in diversity, equity, and inclusion. merit-based hiring. We already talked about that executive order. It's absurd. And it's insane that you even have to sign an executive order to do this stuff. Yet, this is how far the Democrats have taken the ball down the court. And that stuff is getting revoked. And I think it is safe to assume that a majority of the American public is very much in favor of that. They are not a fan of pitting individuals against each other based on their gender, based on their race, based on whatever sort of DEI parameters are put in. They're not a fan of that. Surprise. Obviously, energy is a big issue for Trump. You heard the phrase drill, baby, drill. That was brought up a whole bunch throughout the campaign. Obviously, gas prices have continued to be a major issue for the American consumer as they have dealt with the rising cost of inflation. Gas and energy is a major part of that as well. And in regards to that, well, we got some EOs on energy policy. Taking a look at that. An executive order to maximize development and production of natural resources in Alaska to make the state a resource reservoir for the nation to ramp up fossil fuel extraction. The declaration of a national energy emergency was also signed in by Trump yesterday. He signed an order unleashing energy production, easing the permitting process and other regulatory systems to ensure efficient energy production, as well as a memorandum to improve Southern California's water access by routing more water from the Sacramento San Delta to other parts of the state to be used in wildfire mitigation. We've seen him and his comments on there not being enough water in portions of Southern California, where wildfires do literally continue to burn this morning. More on the energy front, a temporary withdrawal of all offshore wind leases and an order to review government leasing and permitting practices for wind-powered projects. Now, there is currently a offshore wind lease that is being discussed here in southeastern North Carolina, portions of Brunswick County. Obviously, it seems like that will have an impact on that. But again, this is a temporary withdrawal. We'll see. And Trump made some comments about windmills yesterday. We'll see kind of what the actual government platform stands as the weeks and months go on. Now, this is a big one. This is an exciting one. An official withdrawal from the Paris Climate Accord. As you know, Trump has been very critical of these documents like the Paris Climate Accord. And according to Trump yesterday at Capital One Arena, he says this could save the United States upwards of $1 trillion getting out of the Paris Climate Accords. A formal notice to be sent to the United Nations saying that the United States will put America first in international environmental agreements, including the Paris Climate Accord, while also directing the federal government to do the same. So notifying the UN that we are also out of the Paris Climate Accord. See you later. Don't have any gripes or concerns over that at all. Military and national security is the next topic in which Donald Trump brought up. We'll get into that coming up here in just a minute. Want to remind you to check out our YouTube channel. You can subscribe to the show and watch it live weekday mornings here at 7 o'clock or catch the podcast after the fact by subscribing to our YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/@TheNickCraigShow. You can also view that and all of our other links this morning by visiting the website nickcraig.com. You'll see all of the various social media links on there where you can not only watch live, but listen to the podcast on your phone and take the show with you on demand. So it's the our YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheNickCraigShow. Aqua Blue chiming in on our Rumble chat this morning, saying good morning. It is a good morning in America, no question about that, as we continue to recap the inauguration day yesterday for the Trump administration, the golden era of America, as we continue the discussion of his executive orders. And back to that, military and national security. Trump issued an order to reevaluate and realign U.S. foreign aid. It's a big budget buster right there. He also signed an order asking the Department of Defense to come up with plans to protect the United States' territorial integrity and sovereignty by targeting drug trafficking, human trafficking, illegal immigration, and other criminal activities. With that, he also signed a memorandum to immediately grant a six-month interim security clearance to certain personnel hired by the Trump administration so they can access the White House regardless of a clearance backlog, Trump said was left from the Biden administration. Well, that could be a huge issue where you've got the outgoing administration who has not processed these security clearances beforehand. Just, and that's either done intentionally, which of course wouldn't surprise you, but probably more likely just due to more of the incompetence out of the previous administration. Huge issue there. Continuing on military and national security, an America First policy directive to the Secretary of State to champion American-focused interests in foreign policy. Of course, we talked about that a little bit earlier this morning. Marco Rubio has officially been confirmed as Trump's Secretary of State. So that's a directive to Rubio and the team that he is going to build in the Secretary of State's office, as well as an order defining the organization of the National Security Council and subcommittees. So that is dealing with military and national security. We'll turn our attention to taxes and tariffs. With that, Trump is creating an America First trade policy. With that, it is set to prioritize American workers and companies while also establishing a, quote, external revenue service, the ERS. You're familiar with the Internal Revenue Service, the IRS. Here with the ERS, they are going to be tasked with collecting tariffs, duties, and other foreign trade-related revenues, as well as a memorandum declaring the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, as well as a global tax deal, and claiming that that has no force or effect in the United States. Taxes and tariffs are something that are rather interesting when we talk about in the transition or during the campaign for Trump, and it's something that economists are pretty split on. Now, I'm of the mindset that inherently tariffs hurt. They do. And tariffs are by definition not free market economics. However, the threat of tariffs is really where I think that word shines. And Trump went through his little soliloquy yesterday about how the word tariff is one of his favorite words in the dictionary, and it's something that he's a really big fan of. And you know, we'll see individuals that he brings in alongside him to deal with the economic elements of this administration, where they fall on this. I think from a bargaining perspective, tariffs make a lot of sense. But there's no question about it. If we levy major tariffs on places like China, it will absolutely have a major impact on the U.S. consumer. And unfortunately, the U.S. consumer does not have the breathing room. The average consumer does not have the leeway right now to deal with some of those rising prices in the short term, if that's what ended up happening. That's kind of the issue with tariffs. Trump loves the word. He talks about it all the time. It's one of those things that we'll have to keep an eye on and see how that takes place. We also had some changes to the federal government taking place here as well. Creation of the Presidential Advisory Commission called the Department of Government Efficiency. You heard a lot about DOGE throughout the campaign, throughout the election cycle. That was set to be led by Elon Musk, the billionaire owner of Tesla and SpaceX, as well as Vivek Ramaswamy. It appears that Ramaswamy is on the out with the DOGE team. There's some rumblings and rumors that he might run to be the governor of Ohio. There were some other comments that he could potentially be put into the Ohio Senate seat that's now vacant due to J.D. Vance being the vice president. none of that has really come to fruition. He's not going to be selected for that Ohio Senate seat. The lieutenant governor of Ohio is getting the tap and the nod there. And apparently he's out of DOGE, so we'll have to keep an eye on that. With these federal government changes, he undid 78 of former President Joe Biden's executive actions, orders, and presidential memorandums. With that, as I mentioned earlier on, this is the importance of taking executive action, but also codifying them through Congress. Because as easy as it was for Joe Biden to sign those 78 executive orders or actions, well, Trump literally revoked them with the stroke of a pen. This stuff has got to be encapsulated within government if it's good, if it makes sense to take an executive order and pass it through Congress in one form or another. With that, he also signed a directive for every federal government department and agency to address the cost of living, encouraging them to cut bureaucracy, cut red tape. We'll see what that actually means, as well as a government-wide directive to prevent government censorship against free speech. This, of course, something very near and dear to President Trump's heart, as he has essentially been on the tip of the spear in regards to big government censorship. We'll track that as well. Also, a directive for the federal government to, quote, end the weaponization of government against the political adversaries of the previous administration, which, again, is something that he had to face big time over the last couple of years. There was also some additional executive actions that didn't really fit into any of the categories. The first one we'll skip over, we'll come back to it. He did give a full pardon for roughly 1,500 January 6 defendants, and 14 of those individuals were commuted of their sentences. That is likely to cause some major issues. I just wanted to read through exactly what this looks like and go through this proclamation. It reads as follows. This proclamation ends the grave national injustice that has been perpetrated upon the American people over the last 4 years and begins a process of national reconciliation. Acting pursuant to the grant of authority in Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution of the United States, I do hereby commute the sentences of the following individuals convicted of offenses related to events that occurred at or near the U.S. Capitol on January the 6th, 2021, to served two times served as of January 20th, 2025. I'm not going to read through the names, but the second part of this is to grant a full, complete, and unconditional pardon to all other individuals convicted of offenses related to the events that occurred at or near the U.S. Capitol on January the 6th. With that, the executive order also reads as follows. The Attorney General, which is soon to be Pam Bondi once she's confirmed, the Attorney General shall administer the immediate issuance of certificates of pardon to all individuals described in Section B above, and shall ensure that all individuals convicted of offenses related to events that occurred at or near the U.S. Capitol who are currently held in prison are released immediately. I further direct the Attorney General to pursue dismissal with prejudice to the government of all pending indictments against individuals for their conduct related to events at or near the U.S. Capitol on January the 6th, 2021. The Bureau of Prisons shall immediately implement all instructions from the Department of Justice regarding this directive. So not only is he pardoning some 1,500 individuals, he is directing his soon-to-be AG to essentially go after dismissing all of those pending charges that are still lapsing here 4 years later. And of course, the media, there will be a lot of outrage over the January 6th stuff. Because, you know, you'll always hear from the left that January 6th is the darkest day in democracy. It's the worst thing that's ever happened to the country. It's like, you know, modern day 9/11. Just constantly with the ridiculous, nonsensical analogies. But here's the situation. These individuals, if they committed crimes, should have been held accountable. I am in full agreement with that. I think I am a believer that if you break the law, you should be held into account. You have had people that have been waiting 4 years for their day in court because the federal government, and in the meantime, they, by the way, have been sitting in prison because the federal government has slow walked these individuals. If you were going to charge them with trespassing, if you're going to charge them with disorderly conduct, charge them, convict them, and be done with it so they can serve their time and be done. But that's not what's happening. The federal government is slow walking these individuals, making their lives a living hell, all to make a point. But Trump made the comment yesterday. Some reporter was asking about the January 6th. He said there's been people that have been literally convicted of murder and released in the time that these individuals have been sitting in jail waiting. And I don't know if he's got an exact example of that, but there are absolutely instances of individuals committing heinous acts of violence and other crimes that have been charged, convicted, and served their time in the period in which these individuals have been waiting for the federal government to do their jobs. That's unacceptable. Man, these cases should be pretty cut and dry. Did you trespass? Yes. Okay. Charged, dealt with, and done. So I'm all in favor of Trump commuting these sentences. These individuals have been treated incredibly poorly by the federal government. Again, I don't excuse the action. I think if you trespassed and damaged property within the U.S. Capitol, you absolutely should be held to account. But this is not the process. This is not the way in which that's supposed to take place. The weaponization of the federal government against political opponents is one of the biggest issues that this country faces right now, second to none. It's one of the biggest issues that we face. So that, of course, is something that's going to get the media all riled up. With that, Trump also signed an executive order to withdraw the United States of America from the World Health Organization, which Trump also did back in 2020, a memorandum promoting beautiful federal civic architecture, an executive order restoring the name of Mount McKinley after President Barack Obama changed the name back in 2015, and he's also changing the name of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. Pretty cool to see that taking place. And now the one up top. Giving the social media platform TikTok 75 days to find a U.S.-based buyer before facing a federal ban. This is a tough one. Trump, of course, was the individual that brought forward all of the discussion about originally banning TikTok. He has now seen the light and admitted so yesterday that, and he's talked about it in the past, that he has used the platform and has found great success on the platform, talking about winning the youth vote. He believes that TikTok was a large part of that. I'm not going to disagree. However, I don't believe this executive order is the best thing to do. As of right now, the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled on the TikTok ban. And I don't believe that the president's order in regards to that is necessarily a good thing to do. Should TikTok be banned? I don't think that's not what I'm insinuating. That's not what I think is necessarily the best idea. But there's no legal basis for Trump to issue an executive order in regards to TikTok. I don't know. There's just something that is really rubbing me wrong about the TikTok thing. We have had our highest court rule on the issue. It's said and done. And the idea that the president is issuing an executive order to give them 75 more days, ignoring the U.S. Supreme Court, is something that I'm just not in favor of. And in this case, I'm not attempting to be, and I'm not overly critical of Trump, but that this is not the way that it should be done. This is not the process that should be followed in regards to TikTok. That as of right now, the app should be banned. It should be. That's the decision from the courts. And now in the background, if they find a buyer and things change, all right. But I'm not a fan of what Trump is doing with this 75-day extension of TikTok, which I'll once again remind you is owned and operated by the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party. Not a fan of it, have never used it, have no interest in using it. I don't believe that what Trump did with this executive action is a good thing in regards to TikTok. We'll wait and see how it plays out. Overall, I think his executive orders were absolutely fantastic. But the orders are just one piece of the pie. We've got to take those executive orders, take that executive action, and turn it into, you know, actual work. Part of that, as Trump claimed, is going to be done through Doge, where Doge is going to be responsible for making sure that some of these issues that are coming to fruition through executive action are dealt with within the federal government. That's a great idea. I think it's a great use of that department, at least at the start. And so now we wait. And now it is Trump's first full day in office as the 47th president of the United States. Came out of the gate running yesterday. What a day. It's church service at what, like 9 o'clock yesterday morning? Signing executive orders 12 hours later in the Oval Office, then heading to three different inaugural balls last night. But don't worry, right? Trump's not mentally fit to be president. He's too old, right? He doesn't have the stamina to be the commander in chief. Can you imagine Joe Biden on that marathon yesterday? Church in the morning, swearing in an inaugural address at the Rotunda, then lunch, then over to the Capitol One Arena to host a rally, then back to the White House, signing executive action in the Oval Office, then balls at night. No way. Old Sleepy Joe couldn't have made it halfway through that day. So what we'll do here is we're going to be joined, very excited to chat with Terry Schilling coming up here in just a few minutes. He is the president of the American Principles Project. We'll get his reaction and recap from yesterday's inaugural events. Plus, we will take a look at what could be some pretty treacherous weather across the Cape Fear region as we head into the evening and nighttime hours. You're listening to the Nick Craig Show. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. It's available 24/7 wherever you get your show. Just search for the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app and tap that follow and subscribe button. You'll get a new show delivered each and every weekday morning. You can also listen online at nickcraig.com. We'll grab a quick break, chat with Terry Schilling, and take a look at the weather coming up after this. You're listening to The Nick Craig Show. And welcome back to The Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget to give us a follow over on Rumble. It's rumble.com/ The Nick Craig Show, where you can watch the show live and catch the recording after we are done here weekday mornings at 7 o'clock. It's rumble.com/ The Nick Craig Show. The link over also on the website, nickcraig.com. Well, obviously a busy day in Washington, D.C. yesterday, and it's my pleasure to welcome Terry Schilling to the Nick Craig Show this morning. Washington, D.C. yesterday, inauguration day for the 45th, now 47th president of the United States. That is President Donald Trump. To get some reaction to what we saw yesterday and what things might look like in the years to come, it's my pleasure to welcome to the Nick Craig Show this morning Terry Schilling, the president of the American Principles Project. Terry, thanks for the time this morning. A great day in Washington, D.C. yesterday. Give us your overall reaction to it.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Nick. And I think President Trump's exactly right. America is entering a new golden age. He's signed over 200 executive orders yesterday, ranging from everything from securing our southern border, increasing our national security, unleashing American energy, and giving much needed relief to American families. But also, and who would have thought we would have ever had to do this? He signed an executive order going back to two genders. And recognizing that women are adult human females as part of a way to punch back against the Democrats' insanity on gender identity policy. So it's a new golden era for America, and we're going to put America first. So it's very, very beautiful. I'm so excited to be working and helping President Trump get this pro-family agenda done.
One of the things I kept seeing all over social media yesterday, the comment over and over again, we're so back and we're back, America's back. And what you just mentioned in this idea that you have to pass an executive order to claim very clearly that there are two genders, male and female, Tara, doesn't that really show how far we've kind of gotten our eye off of the ball here?
Yeah, it does, Nick. And here's the real thing. It's not a reflection on the American people. They're actually very much sane when it comes to gender. Only about 20-25% of Americans get crossed up and confused about gender policy. It's our politicians that are really the problem. And the good news is that the Republican Party has recognized gender ideology for the threat that it is. They spent a ton of money attacking, and also how unpopular it is. They spent a ton of money in the campaign trail attacking Democrats for it because the American people are with us on this. I want to get these policies done, secure these victories. This is wasted time and effort, right? It's no better to debate gender policy and what gender is than it is to debate whether or not the sky is blue or the sun is hot. These are obvious things that science has settled long ago. We can't get to this new golden era for America if we're still debating things like gender.
Kind of on the precipice of all of this, I want to get your reaction to what we learned just hours before the inauguration yesterday. You had the Biden administration and the president outgoing, pardoning members of Congress, pardoning Dr. Anthony Fauci. Then, Terry, literally as Trump is walking into the Capitol Rotunda, pardoning his whole family. What is your reaction to that?
Well, the thing that bothers me the most, look, I'm pro-family. I think that, your loyalties are to God, family, and country in that order. So I don't really fault him for going easy on his family. But here's my real problem. He's pre-pardoning them. Before any of these people have even had charges against them or had any type of conviction, he is pardoning them. That's not right. It's almost like it's an admission of guilt. So, Anthony Fauci was on that list of pardons that Biden has done before being even charged with anything. That is not what the pardon system is meant to do. The pardoning system is meant to protect people and let people go if the state's been too hard on them or if something has come out after the conviction. It's too much. It's not fair. And there are so many other people. This is a really bad precedent to start. I mean, if Republicans start doing this and then the next Democrat starts doing this, it's going to keep exacerbating to where you're going to pardon the entire country. It doesn't make any sense.
Terry Schilling joins us this morning on the Nick Craig Show as we're discussing yesterday's inauguration. Terry, back to families. Obviously, inflation has really hurt the middle class. Their paychecks now for the last couple of years have been pinched beyond belief. You've got major sacrifices being made in U.S. households. What are some of the things that you think the Trump administration and Congress needs to focus on to give some much needed relief to the middle class here in America?
Well, the first and foremost thing that they need to do is they need to lower energy prices, right? And that's why those executive orders around energy policy today were so important, is we're sitting on all this oil, we're sitting on all this coal, we're sitting on all this natural gas, and we have all these things at our fingertips that will both simultaneously lower energy prices and also create jobs and create prosperity in America. We need to tap into that. Energy prices drive inflation to an extent that, a much larger extent than other issues. So, addressing the energy crisis in this country with prices is a great first step. I also think that the Trump administration would do well to look at school choice programs and giving parents more flexibility to afford, to use their own taxpayer dollars that they're putting into the system to use for putting their kids into a school of their choice. Parents like me who are very concerned about what kids are learning in public school, it costs a lot of money post taxes to send my kids to a school where they're at least learn how to read and write, let alone be protected against the ideology that says that there's 57 genders or whatever the heck it's up to now.
Yeah, complete and total madness there. Terry, tell us a little bit about the American Principles Project and what you guys do day in and day out and some of the work you're looking to hope to accomplish here with the new administration.
Well, Nick, I just want to thank you for having me on. It's so important to get our messages out there and make sure the people hear the news first and foremost from directly from the source. We're building what I call the NRA for families. right? And what I mean by that is the same way that the NRA protects the Second Amendment rights of gun owners and people in America, we protect the innocence of children, we protect parental rights, and we do it by running campaign ads and unelecting really bad guys that are hurting our families and replacing them with good guys. It's the same concept that every other special interest group in D.C. follows. You know, there's big pharma, big oil, big tobacco. American Principles Project is big family, and that's the best way to describe us.
How do folks get connected and learn more about your efforts?
Very simple. It's just AmericanPrinciplesProject.org, or you can follow me on social media. All my handles across all platforms is just Schilling, S-C-H-I-L-L-I-N-G, 1776, 1776.
Terry Schilling joins us this morning on The Nick Craig Show. Where it's a couple
a
minutes
busy day, and where it's now a couple minutes after 8 o'clock.
Welcome back as we continue with the program on this Tuesday morning. All right, let's do it. It is time to talk about some winter weather that is set to affect portions of southeastern North Carolina throughout the day today. There is already a winter storm warning that is in effect for our coastal counties here, Columbus, Brunswick, New Hanover, and Pender. That is set to go into effect at 9 p.m. tonight, and it will last until 7 o'clock tomorrow morning, as we are expecting some snowfall across the region. This is the latest forecast from the National Weather Service here in Wilmington. They released this forecast right around 4:30 this morning. And they're calling for pretty much all of Brunswick, New Hanover, and a vast majority of Pender County, somewhere between 2 and 3 inches of snow. Now, obviously, you've probably been seeing a conversation and comment on social media over the last couple of days about this. There were some, if you like, probably back mid portions of last week into the weekend, there were comments about 6, 7, 8 inches of snow. And while that's not looking like it's super likely to happen as of right now, there is the possibility that this slightly overperforms. So what you're going to be dealing with and what we'll be dealing with starting a little bit later on tonight is a pretty widespread 2-3 across the Cape Fear region. Obviously, with that, it is going to cause some major issues in terms of travel and individuals that are needing to go out and to work tomorrow. With that, we talked about yesterday, school systems are changing what they're doing in regards to remote learning. With that, the city of Wilmington has announced that all city offices buildings will be closing at noon today. The city council will take place at city council will have their meeting coming up at 9 o'clock this morning instead of where it was planned to take place at 6:30. Curie Beach was supposed to have a meeting tonight. That has been canceled. The town of Carolina Beach is closing all of their offices at noon today. And similarly, over in Brunswick County, their facilities and everything are closing tonight. And I would suspect, at least as the forecast looks right now, that things probably are going to be pretty nasty out tomorrow morning if we do get those couple of inches overnight, which is prominently what it's looking like right now, that we will see a situation in which a lot of things are closed and at least for at least the first half of the day tomorrow as this winter weather affects the area. Irregardless of the snow in the region, we are going to be dealing with some blisteringly cold temperatures. Taking a look at the forecast over at WECT this morning, they've got their 7-day forecast graphic, and it shows some very cold temperatures tonight down to the low 20s. Wednesday night into Thursday, we've got lows in the upper teens. The wind will be whipping with this, so there's going to be some very chilly temperatures with that snow likely tonight and throughout the early morning hours tomorrow. So if you are a guy from the Northeast, a damn Yankee that has made your way the Great Migration to states like North Carolina, well, you'll probably see some white stuff when you wake up tomorrow morning or even late in the night tonight. Probably
Not going to want to travel at least too much tomorrow morning, as the roads are probably going to be pretty nasty, but have to play everything by ear. I'll keep you up to date with what I'm seeing forecast-wise over on my X account throughout the day. You can follow me over there on X at Nicholas M. Craig if you are a user of the X platform. Give me a follow. We will keep an eye on the forecast. I did want to bring up just one more graphic in regards to this. Gannon Medwick, who is the chief meteorologist over at WECT, does a phenomenal job walking us through what we are expecting. And he's got this kind of percentage-wise graphic that he's been posting out over on social media. And it looks like this. The possibility of no snow at this point, he has at a 0%. And really where the two main categories look like is between a coating and that 2 to 5 inches, probably more in the 2 to 3, maybe 4 inch realm. 5 inches would be a lot for this area. And then there is that small 5% chance of 6 or more inches of snow that will cause some of those major travel issues. So that is what we are tracking in regards to the forecast. If anything majorly changes throughout the day, we'll take a look at that and post updates on social media. And regardless, back here tomorrow morning, and we'll recap what everything is looking like outside and how the forecast has either verified and we get the snow that we are anticipating, or whether it is a bust, which seems very, very unlikely as we are very close to it. Taking a look earlier this morning, I was looking at the radar. It is that this snow kind of forecast is pretty wild. There are blizzard warnings in portions of Louisiana this morning. This is the live map courtesy of AccuWeather.com this morning. You've got heavy snowfall all the way from the portions of the Texas border all the way up through portions of Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. That storm system will continue its trek up through portions of Georgia, South, and North Carolina throughout the day today and bring some of that heavy snowfall. It is dumping snow in areas like Lake Charles, Baton Rouge right now with in some cases, a blizzard warning in effect. The first time that's ever happened in portions of southern Louisiana. So for you winter weather folks, well, you might be, it looks like you'll be able to enjoy at least a little bit of snow here along the Cape Fear coast over the next day or so. Want to remind you, if you want access to exclusive content, plus the daily show notes with all the links and articles and posts that I refer to, you can get that access to that and more by visiting patreon.com/Nick Craig. I've had a couple of folks sign on to that over the last few days. Your support in the program here is greatly appreciated. I can't thank you enough as we and Trek on this endeavor of breaking from the corporate media structure and streaming the show live on our YouTube, Rumble, and X platforms. If you think you're getting some value out of the show, I encourage you to head on over there, patreon.com/Nick Craig. There's a $5 and $10 a month tier. And I learned yesterday, thanks to one of our great supporters, that you can actually set a custom amount in there as well. So greatly appreciate everybody's support of the show. And we're going to keep rolling here on the Nick Craig Show. Well, a big day today. It is Trump's first full day in the office of the presidency. Busy day for him yesterday. Potentially some more Senate confirmation votes. We'll be tracking that all throughout the day today and have the latest details coming up for you here tomorrow morning, streaming live on our YouTube, X, and Rumble channels. Thank you so much for joining us. We're back tomorrow morning at 7 right here on the Nick Craig Show.